an ideal resource for someone seeking to wipe out Buddhas.
The Raja is using their Book of Lineage to hunt them?
And has done so quite successfully. There were thousands of Buddhas in Tarachand 17 years ago. Those who have not fled the borders are now dead or in hiding.
Devon lifts his head, his expression cold.
If the Raja wants them dead, why don't they all run and hide?
Jale warns of a fifth power.
With Buddha origin still open to the drawing of Anu, Brother Shan points to a face I did not before notice, hidden in the shadows.
Demon Kor was in attendance that day. He disagreed with Anu's decision to bestow upon mortals these godly powers, so he took it upon himself to employ his abilities in a fifth mortal. In that dark hour, the Demon Kor created a voider who could rend the sky from the land, destroying all life. The first Buddha's mission was to trap the voider. After they did so, they hid the secret of how they captured the voider in the Jale. But the same powers that confine the voider can also release him. Whoever has the book can set him loose. Every Buddha leader protected the Jale until Raja Tarek took hold of it. If the Raja opens the void...
I shudder, thinking of the horror Tarek could unleash. Devon gets to his feet.
We're out of time, Kali. Skill demonstrations start soon.
Brother Shan tucks the book into my satchel.
Keep this hidden. If you have any more questions, you know how to reach me.
We rise, and he faces Devon.
Brother Devon?
Captain Naik,
Devon says, correcting him.
Captain, I understand this was difficult for you to hear, but I hope you will come to see that this war is an abomination in the sight of the gods.
Devon manages a brusque nod, and we leave. Worries cloud my thoughts. I had hoped that hearing that Buddhas are Anu's children would relieve my uncertainties, but the breadth of Tarek's hatred for Buddhas has undone any chance for peace of mind. Devon stops me outside the entrance to the wives' wing.
Don't expect anything from the Buddhas, Kali. They have been active participants in the war as long as the Raja. They're loyal to no one, not even their own.
You still don't believe Buddhas could be good? I quiet my breath, praying that Brother Shan's words have softened him. Devon's eyes go flat.
I believe what I have seen all my life.
I nod, my chest caving in. Brother Shan gave a fair explanation for why the Buddhas are at war with us, but not why Yasmin's death drove Tarek to eradicate them. We are missing part of the story. Devon rests a hand on my shoulder.
I'm going to assign you another guard. You will have two with you at all times. The burner won't get close to you again.
I manage another nod, though it is not the burner, I fear, but myself. We start to my chamber, my legs weighing heavier with each step. I wish that I could undo everything that has happened since I met the burner. I wish that I could go back to when I had fevers, nothing more. I wish that I could be that sickly girl from the temple. I knew who I was then. Now, I cannot trust my own hands. Anu, please do not let this be true. I will adhere to the five virtues. I will obey everything asked of me. Just please, do not let me be an enemy to the Raja, to Devon, to the Empire. I listen with my heart, but my only answer comes from my pulse, a ticking timepiece propelling me closer and closer to a ledge from which there is no escape. 19. The gardens are set for skill demonstrations. The Raja's court, benefactors, ranis, and courtesans, cluster under silk tents, hiding from the sun like lizards under a rock. From the terrace above, I watch the wide strip of greenery where my contenders are taking turns showing off. Perspiration makes my blouse cling to my back, and a hot wind blasts my exposed skin. Parisa hands me a chalice of chilled, spiced wine.
You need this more than I do.
I accept the cup, the welcome cold biting into my fingers, but do not sample it. I must be clear-headed for my performance. I am slated to present last, wherein I will have 30 seconds to astonish this throng of drunken benefactors and validate my place as the Raja's champion. Tension builds at the base of my skull. Our battle skills are a sign of devotion to Ki. They should not be diminished to entertainment. But refusing to perform would forfeit my opportunity to establish that I am not a weak contender. Farisha pitches an axe across the field, and its sharp head decapitates a bush. Oh! The audience peals.
At this rate, Tarek will have no roses left, Parisa mutters to Ishana.
Their translucent veils flutter in the stale afternoon breeze. The previous dozen or so courtesans started ripping apart the garden with their blades. The once beautiful foliage is quickly being pruned to pieces. From the corner of my eye, I see Natesha, mingling with Anjali and Mathura in front of a servant waving an ostrich fan. With our segregated lives, I have not seen Natesha since the declaration ceremony. Her face seems paler and thinner, her eyes bigger. But if she is ailing, it did not show in her demonstration. She brandished her khanda like a seasoned blade fighter. Farisha's display earns her applause. I scuff my feet against the terracotta tiles, my confidence that I will impress the crowd crumbling to dust. I want to present my skill and be done with this spectacle.
It's a shame two courtesans are already out. Ishana scoots closer to a servant swaying a feather fan. Another servant passes out ice chips from a golden bucket. She and Parisa take a chunk. I overheard the healer say, food poisoning.
Sabotage, Parisa says.
She runs ice across her brow.
Happens every tournament.
Rarely does anyone get caught.
Ishana pops a piece of ice into her mouth.
At least we know it isn't Lakia. She wouldn't stoop to toying with the courtesan duels, not with her own to worry about.
Who challenged her? I ask.
Four fools,
Ishana answers around the ice in her cheek.
They will be fortunate if Lakia tears their throats out in the middle of the night instead of in the arena.
Sweat breaks out on the nape of my neck. Sabotage tactics have begun. I feel for Yasmin's dagger hidden at my waist, grateful for the protection. Anjali's name is announced, and she strides forward to perform her 30-second demonstration. I lift my chin to see her better over the benefactors at the front of the crowd. She is my youngest opponent, yet she carries herself with maturity. Anjali picks up a stack of chakrams, ringed throwing blades with blunt rims on the inside, and aims at a feather-stuffed dummy across the lawn. An official tips the sand timer, and Anjali tosses the rounded chakrams in quick succession. The first one slices off the dummy's foot. The next one severs the second ankle. Another two discs disconnect its hands at the wrist. Another stabs itself into the dummy's abdomen. The final disc slices through the dummy's neck, beheading it. Anjali bows to the cheering audience and blows kisses. She has talent, I say.
And ego, adds Ishana with a dry smile.
You will go up against her in the tournament, Kalinda, Parisa says.
Ishana nods.
Anjali will be in the final three.
My insides roll like windswept sand dunes. I try not to envision Anjali's chakrams amputating my limbs. Parisa sends me a heartening smile.
Don't let it bother you. Tarek could have chosen any of his courtesans to wed him, but he didn't want them as his Rani. He wants you.
If only that were the comfort she means it to be. Ishana runs her fingers absent-mindedly through her hair.
What skill are you showing, Kalinda?
It's a surprise. Ishana exchanges a look of consternation with Parisa.
Whatever you do, it ought to be flashy. Lakia opted to perform before you.
Parisa slips the last of her ice down her shirt.
Lakia loves dramatics.
Lakia plays mind games. I will not let her intimidate me. My gaze wanders to the raised platform at the center of the terrace, where Lakia sits on her throne beside Tarek. The Raja is watching me. His gaze slides down to my throat, and he smiles. I did not want to wear Yasmin's necklace today, but Asha insisted. Considering Lakia's deep scowl, I am glad I did. Mind games can go both directions.
Kalinda?
Shyla comes through the crowd, holding a bundled infant.
We came to wish you good luck.
She leans toward us, and I look into her newborn's sleeping face.
She's tiny, Parisa says.
What's her name? Asks Ishana.
Rehan, after my mother.
Shyla offers the child to me.
Would you like to hold her?
I shouldn't. I have never held a baby before. My fevers prevented me from working in the temple nurseries. Rehan is so little and fragile that I would not know what to do with her.
She's beautiful.
Tarek must be proud.
He doesn't meet his children until they're older.
Shyla glances up at her husband on the podium and lowers her voice.
He's still distraught over losing his firstborn.
Parisa and Ishana nod in unison. I can understand how losing a child would have wounded Tarek, but for him to not want to meet his newborn is unfathomable. I cannot resist running my finger over his daughter's fuzzy dark hair.
We should return to the nursery.
Shyla smiles.
Good luck, Kalinda.
Thank you. I stroke Rehan's soft head once more, and they disappear into the audience.
Parisa's eyes go wide.
Hurry this way.
She ducks her head and links arms with Ishana and me, dragging us in the opposite direction from the place she was looking.
General Gautam is over there. Last time we spoke, he tried to touch me.
I twist my head to see the general, but we lose him in the crowd.
Gautam is terrible, says Ishana. I would loathe to be his.
Kalinda, your guard is looking for you. Devon starts to cross the covered terrace. He is supposed to wait outside the tents with the other guards. I try to repel him with an off-putting glower, but he keeps coming. What has come over him? The Raja could see him. I glance up at Tarek to see if he is still keeping an eye on me. And the gong sounds for quiet. All look to the Raja, rising from his throne.
A treasure was returned to me this morning.
Tarek motions before us, and the crowd swivels to face the clearing. Two soldiers drag out a filthy woman and shove her to her knees on the grass. Whispers spread across the tent like a sudden wind.
My dear wife Talin has been found.
Unfortunately, the guard she ran away with did not survive his capture.
His contrived regret hardens my jaw. Devon reaches me and speaks low in my ear.
We have to talk.
Not now. He could not have chosen a worse time. We are surrounded by people, the Raja is watching me, and the reappearance of the runaway Rani tells me something horrible is about to happen. Lakia strolls out of the warm-up tent in the clearing, carrying an Arumi.
My kindred has requested that she carry out Talin's penalty, as a demonstration of her skill,
Tarek continues. Great Anu. They are going to discipline the woman here.
How many lashes, my kindred?
Tarek calls over the audience. Lakia circles the woman, blades trailing in the grass like silver asps.
One for each day she was missing.
Husband, please forgive me,
Talin cries.
I will be loyal. I will obey.
Tarek speaks over her, his hard eyes glinting.
How many days was she gone, kindred?
35.
Bile scalds my windpipe. The Urumi will tear Talin apart long before she is lashed that many times.
This is brutality beyond retribution. Raja Tarak wants to make an example out of her, but she is not his enemy. She is his wife. Talin deserves more respect than to be used as an exhibit. The Raja should end her mercifully with a clean kill. Devin, we have to stop this, I whisper. He curls his fingers around my elbow, holding me in place.
There's nothing you can do.
Lakia halts behind the sobbing woman.
Shall we count with the gong?
She lifts the orumi, and the servant manning the gong raises the mallet. I yank myself from Devin's grasp and shove through the bystanders to the terrace balcony.
Is this the best you can do?
I say. Lakia looks up at me, the orumi outstretched. Talin's a large target, I say. And the orumi has so many blades. This won't be much of a show of your skill. Lakia lowers the orumi.
I would like to see how you fare against the orumi, Vera G. Do you propose a better demonstration, my champion?
Tarik calls from his throne. I turn to him, fingers quivering against my sides.
I do, Your Majesty. A skill competition between the kindred and myself.
Benefactors mumble and nod in appreciation. The Ranis and courtesans whisper their surprise. Devin shakes his head to end this. I ball my trembling fingers into fists. I will not allow Lakia to treat this Rani like a stuffed dummy. Raja Tarak considers me with a probing stare. He must realize that I am delaying Talin's death and preserving what dignity she has left. But this is a diversion. Once I finish competing with Lakia, skill demonstrations will be over, and I will plead with the Raja on Talin's behalf for a merciful, private death befitting her station.
By all means.
Tarik sweeps his arm to push me along.
Present your challenge.
I signal Asha over from the warm-up tent where she waits. She lugs a crate of clinking glass orbs into the garden, a group of serving women behind her. I recognize them as the ones who bring my tub and bath water.
Glass orbs, Lakia sneers. You challenge me with decorations.
Nervous chuckles sound from the crowd. They're small and light. I descend the steps to the lower garden. A much more difficult target than a shackled prisoner. Talin cries softly on the ground. God, she looks about my age. I stand between her and Lakia, my heart drumming so hard that I fear it will fracture a rib.
Not up to the task?
Lakia pets the orumi handle.
Tell me the terms.
At the signal of the gong, the servants will throw the glass orbs, and we will have 30 seconds to shatter as many as we can. Two guards will keep count of our felled targets.
Whoever breaks the most wins. I motion to Asha to open the crate and pass out the glass orbs to the throwers. The servants fill their arms with them. Asha came prepared with more than enough. Lakia's gaze dashes to the captivated crowd and then narrows on me.
Done. But I choose the guards.
I hide a relieved exhalation. Her pride is dependable, I will commend her for that. The soldiers cart Talin to the perimeter of the clearing. Lakia assigns two guards to keep count, and then faces the wide clearing with the orumi. I stand down the way from her and take my slingshot out of my pocket. Mocking laughter spills out behind me. I stand tall, gaze forward. I will display the skill that best represents me. I am certain that is what the land goddess would advise me to do.
Is that your weapon of choice, my champion?
Tarek's amusement is wearing thin. It is. I seek his patience with a slender smile. You won't be disappointed. Tarik wags a finger.
Continue. Your pathetic attempt to humiliate me will fail,
Lakia says under her breath. I see Talin tremble from the corner of my eye. The kindred has no idea of my intent.
I fill my fist with firing stones from my pouch. Asha and the other servants stand off to my right and left, ready to fling the colorful glass orbs across the clearing. I load my slingshot with the first firing stone, and draw back. Key, let my aim be true. The gong rings, and the sand timer turns. Servants hurl the glass orbs into the air. Lakia lashes out. The Urumi's dozens of blades shatter three orbs from the sky before they soar free. I shoot a twinkling orb arcing away. The ball bursts, and glass rains down like frozen tears. I reload with the stones amassed in my palm and train my sight on another orb farther out. I release, shattering another target. The servants shield their faces upon throwing orb after orb. Lakia is striking down the ones close to her. I release, reload, and shoot. Inhale and load. Exhale and fire. Vibrant shards and fine dust litter the grass with glittering pieces. Seconds drain away in the crack of the Urumi, explosion of glass, and snap of my slingshot. The gong rings, signaling the end of our time. Lakia scans the area around her.
How many?
Her guard counts her broken targets.
The Kindred brought down 18. How many for the Viraji?
Tarek asks, sitting forward on his throne. My range was farther with the slingshot. Whereas Lakia had to break the orbs before they spun away, I shot them down farther out. The audience stays quiet for the second guard to answer.
The Viraji filled 21!
Tarek releases a roar of triumph over the audience's applause.
Bring the Viraji here!
Devin is at my side in an instant. I avoid his tight-lipped frown and go with him, passing through the clapping benefactors. The women utter proclamations of, "With a slingshot!" and, "More than the Kindred!" Devin escorts me to the platform stairs and returns to his place outside the tent. Tarek embraces me atop the podium and swings me around to face the people.
My champion!
His boasting shakes a weak smile out of me. Across the way, Talene crouches in a defensive position, but her chin is lifted high. As I look out over the spectators, waiting for Tarek to stop bragging so that I can speak to him about the fate of his wife, I spot the general. Gautam's arm is tucked around a young woman wearing a veil over the lower half of her face. Her hair is ebony. Her big eyes are vacant. Her figure is tiny beside him, and her skin is icy pale. My heart dives to my feet. Jaya. My world spins to an abrupt halt. Jaya and General Gautam sift to the back of the tent and out of sight. I break from Tarek's hold and hop down off the podium, knees jarring. I reel around, but I cannot see Jaya anywhere. Ishana rushes over.
Kalinda, you were tremendous!
I grab Ishana by the shoulders.
Have you seen General Gautam?
I saw him over there not long. I plunge into the crowd. The general's dark blue uniform should be easy to pick out, but he is nowhere to be seen. I pause and search in a circle, clutching the sides of my head. He must have gone into the gardens. I run down the closest path, following the endless trails away from the tents. My distracted weaving leads me to more empty paths. I stop, my lungs heaving on mounting tears.
Callie!
Devin jogs up behind me. I slam my fists against his torso.
You told me the general did not claim her!
His men lied.
Devin holds his hands up in a plea for peace.
I tried to warn you about Jaya as soon as I saw her.
Why?
I hit him again.
Why would Gautam hide her from me?
To repay you for standing up to him. He saw you and Jaya at skill trials. He knew you were close.
He claimed Jaya.
I cut my hands over my mouth.
Oh, Devin, I let her wait for me, but I didn't know. I didn't know the general would stay in Samia. I didn't know he...
My voice crackles. I dig the heels of my hands into my eyes to distance myself from the image of Jaya pinned against the general's side, but she is all I see. She looked so... so empty.
I promised I would return for her. I promised!
I'm sorry, says Devin. I lower my hands and look into his watery eyes.
I am so sorry,
he says, his face ashen. A scream breaks out from the clearing. I stand taller to see over the shrubbery and glimpse the silver tips of the Arumi's blades flickering as they drop. Another blood-curdling scream digs nails into my spine. Lakia has begun Talin's execution. I cannot appeal to Tarek now. I am too late for Jaya, too late for Talin. I bang my fists against my temples and release a guttural groan.
Talin was going to be punished regardless of what you did, Kali, Devin says.
I flinch at a third lash and a pained sob, quieter than the last. Hot tears burn my eyes.
I suppose she deserves it, then. She deserves to be humiliated and ripped apart for daring to do what she wishes, for daring to love someone of her choosing.
Devin recoils, my words too close. Off in the clearing, Lakia strikes the wayward wife again. This time, there is no scream. 20. I gaze out the balcony door at the falling sun, Asha hovering at my back.
Viraji, it's time to prepare for the feast.
I'm not going, I say. Tarek brought General Gautam with him to Samia. He is the reason Jaya was claimed. I will not dine with a monster. Servants haul in the tub and steaming buckets of bath water. I do not go inside. They fill the bath and file out of my chamber. I still do not budge. Asha lingers, a silent shadow behind me. She waits for me to surrender to my weary bones and emotional fatigue. I do not. My stubbornness prevails, and she pads away. The sky darkens to ash, and Vani burns with soft yellow lights. This could never be my home. I favor snowy winters over this harsh heat. I long for the distinctive spiked apexes of the Alpanas over these rolling dunes of dusty sameness. But I will never again return to Samia. I have no reason to go back without Jaya there. I have been an orphan all my life, but I have never felt without a home, without a family, until now.
You aren't dressed for supper.
I swivel at Mathura's voice. She has broken the kindred's rule, coming to the wife's wing. I'm not hungry.
Neither am I.
She walks to the doorway with a cane.
You put on quite a spectacle today.
A useless delay. Talin was executed nevertheless.
I meant in regard to the general's new wife. And my son.
Jaya is Gautam's wife? I turn my stricken face away from Mathura. She is not finished.
If you care for my son, you will leave him alone.
I go as still as a hare. Mathura must have seen Devin track me down in the spectator's tent to warn me about Jaya. I would hate to know who else saw him. You needn't worry, I say. Devin would never choose me over the Empire. After skill demonstrations, he escorted me to my chamber and left without a word. I am certain Talene's pained screams echo on through his memory as they do mine. Mathura walks to my side.
I thought my son would choose the Empire above all else, too. And then I saw him charge after you into the garden, risking his career, his reputation, his life. Why?
Her gaze searches my face for answers.
Then it occurred to me, to Devin, you are the Empire. You are the Viraji, the people's champion, his champion. He has confused his devotion to Tarachand with his obligation to protect you.
My heart capsizes on a wave of crushing hurt. Devin's loyalty to me is actually his obedience to the Raja. This realization warps every private moment we have had between us. He did not kiss me, I kissed him. And then he asked me to forget about it. Each time we touched before that, he was comforting me, building me up to fight in the tournament.
What would you have me do?
I whisper.
I cannot request for him to be reassigned. I have no reason to dismiss him. And fabricating an excuse would damage his standing in the Imperial Guard.
Athora grips my hands in hers.
Protect him from himself. If Tarek finds out that Devon cares for you, he will not understand that Devon's loyalty is to the throne. I lost one son. I cannot lose the other.
My heartbeat dulls to slow, heavy thuds. My throat strains from holding back tears.
I will remind Devon that I am Tarek's Viraji.
That's all I ask. Mathura squeezes my fingers and lets them go. I exhale the last of my strength and go rest at the foot of the bed. My throbbing head echoes down to my pitching stomach. I want to crawl under my blanket and stay there until my fevers return and burn me up. Mathura follows me.
You should change for the feast. Tarek is waiting.
I cannot face him.
The feast is in your honor. Your absence would be a sign of weakness.
She passes me the evening sari that Asha hung on the bedpost.
Get changed. Your reputation is worth more than a fit of rebellion.
I don't care what Tarek or his court thinks of me. I don't want to be their champion.
But you are. If you cannot face them for yourself, do it for your friend.
She and Gautam are invited. I clutch the cloth to my lap.
He was not supposed to claim Jaya. I swore to return for her.
None of us got what we wanted from the claiming.
Mathura's expression softens, and she sits by my side.
At one time, recipients chose their benefactors.
My gaze snaps to hers.
What?
When I was little, becoming a recipient was a coveted honor. Very few girls were enlisted to be raised by the sisters. In those days, a claiming was a reward for completing rigorous training, a symbol of womanhood and devotion to the gods.
A reward. I have never thought of the claiming as anything more than an inescapable obligation.
The recipients were highly desired as wives. At the time, the rank tournaments were not in practice, and the recipient could reject the benefactor's request.
Mathura's tone darkens.
Then Tarek came to our temple.
He wanted Yasmin at first sight.
She refused him, but Tarek did not care for tradition, and he claimed Yasmin against her will. Word spread about what he had done, and the other benefactors felt their monetary endowments entitled them to any recipient they desired. The temple priestesses declined to change the rite, so some benefactors withdrew their requests, but most withdrew their funding. Fearing the closure of the temples, the sisters complied. The greediest benefactors began to claim recipients for courtesans and servants. Temple enlistment plummeted, so the brethren sent orphan girls to be wards.
Mathura looks down at the blank backs of her hands.
By the time I came of age, 2 years later, I had no choice.
She raises her cool gaze.
You are not the only one dismayed by the life you have been claimed for. But you have been given more than most.
Yes, you must fight for your throne, but should you win, your children will be heirs to the Empire. You will be permitted to raise them and keep them.
You will not suffer the heartache I have for my sons.
I lower my gaze, feeling properly chastised. But my problem still remains. But how can I hide my loathing for Tarek?
You lay up your fury for when you need it most.
Hatred is sustenance for survival.
Use it right, and your loathing will sustain you through the tournament all the way to your triumph.
Mathura pats my knee.
This is how I survive. This is how you will survive.
She stands with the dignity of a sister warrior.
I will meet you at the feast.
Long, low tables fill the throne room, lit by hundreds of fat candles. Tarek is seated at the head of a table set above the rest on the dais, surrounded by his favored four. He beckons me forward. I would rather dine with hogs, but I go to him. Benefactors, courtesans, and Ranis cram around lower tables, bowed with platters of rich dishes. I do not see Jaya or Gautam.
Here's my champion.
Tarak welcomes me with a sloppy kiss on the cheek. I cringe at the stench of Apong on his breath, but I sit cross-legged on the floor cushion beside him. Mathura smiles a distant welcome and puffs on her pipe, her cane propped against the table. Beside her, Ishana beams with a friendliness that nearly curtails my unease for joining their elite group. Anjali lounges on her elbow, eating bits of pineapple, and Lakia sidles up to Tarek's other side possessively, unsubtle as always about her incapacity to share him. Tarek selects a hunk of charred flatbread from a basket and lays it on my plate.
Eat, love. We're celebrating you. This tournament, this feast.
This wine, Anjali says, saluting me with her cup.
Yes. Everything is in the Viraji's honor.
Tarek tops off his chalice and drinks to me. I manage a small smile. Lithophone players perform on the other side of the dais. A dancer moves between the tables with precise, balanced stances. Her hand gestures match the beat, and she stamps her feet in a fancy rhythmic pattern. Tarek taps his fingers in time and eyes the dancer like a hawk spying a mouse in a field. Jaya is still nowhere to be seen. Laughter carries up from the attendees. Farisha grins, her mouth full of food. Should I also relish this feast as my last meal? I stare at my untouched plate, the food growing cold. After another course that I do not partake of, servants carry baskets stacked with wooden lots from table to table. My challengers pick a lot and compare fate's hand with their neighbors. When all of the wooden lots are dispersed, my opponents will be sectioned into pairs for the duels. A servant brings a basket to Anjali. She digs her hand inside and plucks out a stick. Smiling wide, she picks her teeth with the pointy end. Tarek's chuckles boom in my ear.
Come,
he says, inviting Anjali to his side. She squeezes in between us, and I gladly scoot over for her.
You duel tomorrow, my sweet?
She pets the nape of his neck. Afraid for me?
You. Never.
He kisses her forehead, blessing her with good fortune. I am partly disgusted, partly intrigued. The Raja cares for Anjali, yet he supports her fighting to the death. And, remarkably, despite his not claiming her as his Rani, Anjali adores him. Tarek plays more mind games than Lakia. His charm, his bravado, his affection. Are all of these women willing to die for one of his kisses? Or are they playing their part in order to survive? The Raja has set himself up like a god, but I do not fear his power more than the gods. I cannot be the only one. I tolerate the rest of the feast as I would a long day in the oppressive desert sun. Ishana tops off Tarek's chalice, and Lakia and Anjali compete for his lap. I slip away. Only Mathura acknowledges my departure, and then returns to smoking her pipe. Manas and Yatin wait for me in the corridor, but still not Devon. Natesha comes out in the hall to meet me.
Kalinda, have you seen Jaya? I heard she was claimed by the general.
I would never tell her where Jaya is after what Natesha did to her. But I stop myself from saying so. The coal around Natesha's eyes is smeared as though she has been crying. She holds her arms securely across her chest.
I just want to know if Jaya is all right. I know you don't think I care, but I do.
I am so startled by Natesha's sincerity that I answer in kind. I don't know where Jaya is. I saw her with the general at skill demonstrations, but not since. Natesha frowns, her dark eyes troubled. I hardly recognize this fretful young woman.
Are you all right? I say.
Natesha glances over her shoulder at two benefactors watching her from a table in the hall.
I'm fine. She raises a surly lip. Go back to your private wing where you are left alone.
My heart speeds up.
Natasha, if I see Jaya, I will tell her you're looking for her.
Natasha returns to the waiting benefactors. They receive her with hungry hands and oily smiles. Natasha's eyes glaze over when the men touch her, reminding me of how Jaya was acting beside Gautam. I swallow through a rough, dry throat and start off to my chamber, my guards tailing me. I try to leave Natasha's concern for Jaya behind, but it lays a slimy coating all over my insides. I am worried for both of them. At my doorway, I turn my teary eyes away from my guards.
Please tell Asha not to disturb me tonight.
Viraji,
Yatin says in his gentle burr.
Do you need anything?
Actually, yes.
General Gautam claimed a new wife. I would like to meet with her.
Please pass my inquiry along to her servants.
I step inside my chamber and shut my door. The mountain of satin pillows entices me to my bed. I lie down, and the basket of challenges hovers at the fringe of my vision. I pinch my eyes closed. Perhaps, if I pretend hard enough, I can imagine that I am home with Jaya in our chamber readying for bed. But something shifts at my feet. I sit up onto my elbows and see a round lump beneath the bed covers. Keeping my gaze on the bulge, I slide off the bed. The lump extends out into a long, thick rope. I draw Yasmin's dagger and force a steadying breath. Whatever is under my bed covers was put there to stop me from setting foot in the arena. I throw back the blanket, sending pillows flying in a shower of silk. A black snake coils up at the bottom of my bed, agitated at me for stripping away its cozy den. I greet the thin, venomous asp with the point of my dagger and inch away. The snake hisses. I hold still, heeding its warning. My dagger is too short to be useful. Another movement could incite the deadly snake to strike, but I have to try. I slowly step back. The asp opens its mouth and hisses louder, its translucent, curved fangs ready to hook into my flesh.
Don't move,
I hear. The burner steps in from the open balcony and approaches the other side of the bed. The snake stays preoccupied with me, its dark eyes staring me down. The burner sneaks up behind it and swings down with an axe, chopping the asp's head off. Its tail twitches until death. The burner slides his axe into a leather sheath strapped to his back. I keep my dagger, although I have seen what he can do with his hands, and draw back. I consider shouting for my guards, but the truth is, I have been expecting his visit. He lifts the severed pieces of snake off my bed and tosses them into the hearth. He throws kindling on top of the asp's corpse.
Someone wants you dead,
he says.
A lot of someones. I nod at the basket of challenges.
You'll have to get in line.
We don't want to kill you, Viraji. We want to help you.
We? I ask. He grins secretively. He is less menacing when he smiles, even attractive, but appearances are unreliable depictions of character. Raja Tarek is handsome, too.
I found the book you left me, I say.
The warlord wanted you to have it.
He presses his fingertip to the kindling, and fire erupts. Flames chew the wood and consume the snake carcass. The burner brushes off his hands and straightens. He is less bulky without the dark cape, ropey, like a starved wolf. From his pocket, he withdraws the tonic formula and my last remedy vial.
You went through my satchel!
You should find a better hiding place.
He tosses the formula into the fire. I lunge after it, falling to my hands before the hearth and dropping my dagger. The fire devours the paper in seconds. The burner kicks the dagger, and the blade spins out of my reach under the bed. He holds my tonic between two fingers.
This contains two types of poison. Haven't you wondered why it hasn't killed you? You took it this morning, and yet here you are.
I push to my feet. You've been watching me.
He waves aside my accusation.
The point is, you're alive. Your powers burn off the tonic before it poisons you. That's why you must take it every day, or your temperature flares.
I don't have powers, I have fevers.
Even to me, my argument sounds weak.
You don't take poison every morning because you're frightened of fevers. You're afraid of what you could be, of what you could do without it.
My face falls, hearing my fears voiced so succinctly. The burner's gaze softens.
I understand what it's like to hide, but you cannot suppress who you are forever. You will build immunity to the poisons, and your powers will turn on you.
An image of the bent comb fills my mind, and my mouth goes painfully dry.
We can help you. And we can help your friend escape the general.
You know about Jaya? I whisper.
He smiles and comes closer.
We will discuss the terms of our bargain once you agree to stop hiding.
He leans into my side, his breath hot in my ear. My pulse ratchets higher.
So few of us are left. The first time I saw you, I thought you were a mirage. But here you are,
fire burning in your veins.
My chest swells with longing. The burner is like me. All my life, dangerous fevers have separated me from others. Never before have I met anyone with my same condition. He sets my last tonic vial on the bedside table.
You don't have much time. You must raise before you run out of tonic.
I pick up the vial before he changes his mind and throws it into the hearth, too. Raising, whatever it is, may be my only protection from my fevers. But why would the burner and warlord help me?
The tournament starts tomorrow, I say, hedging.
There is still time for you and your friend.
The burner strides to the balcony and looks back, his honey eyes luminous in the moonlight.
I will return tomorrow night for your answer. For the sake of you and your friend, consider our offer.
He leaps over the balcony. I rush to the railing and look down at the shadowed garden. The burner is gone. He has vanished, like a quenched fire without a trace of smoke. 21. Yatin enters my chamber the next morning. Asha finishes brushing my hair and I go to meet him at the door.
Did you find Jaya?
She sends her apologies. Her husband forbids her to see you, but she wishes you luck in the tournament.
I set my jaw. Gautam forbids Jaya to see me.
We will see about that.
Thank you, Yatin. I'm ready to go now. I took my tonic this morning. Though the burner's warning rang clear in my mind, I could not afford to be feverish. Asha adjusts a fold of my skirt. The gold sari swathes me like a cloud, the silver embroidery along my bodice, the ethereal lining. Strokes of coal line the corners of my eyes, and juice stains my lips red. Asha has outdone herself, but this illusion of glamour cannot ease my anxiety. Today is the first day of the tournament. Yatin and Manas escort me to the main foyer. Imperial guards are stationed every few feet down the maze of corridors. More guards border the grand entrance hall, which is swarming with Ranis and courtesans, all buzzing about today's scheduled battles. I notice two things about the guards. First, none of them is Devon. Second, every guard is on edge. What's going on? I ask Manas. He answers a rung above a whisper.
An intruder tried to break into the Raja's chambers early this morning. We're still looking for him.
I scan the guards. Did the burner leave me and go to the Raja's rooms to search for the Jala? Whether he did or did not, I cannot fathom how we will meet again with every guard in the palace looking for him. Imperial guards descend the grand stairway, Raja Tarak between them. Tarak is dressed exquisitely in a gold tunic coat with a silver paisley print over dark trousers. A satin turban is wound around his head. I had thought that Asha wanted me to look my best for the people of Vani,
but now I see that she has dressed me to match our ruler. The Raja draws the attention of every woman in the hall, but he comes to me.
You are more beautiful every day, love.
He kisses my cheek, souring my stomach. Even at this early hour, he smells of Apong and another woman's perfume. Tarek rubs a circle on my hip.
I'm a patient man, but I don't know if I can wait until our wedding night.
I lower my eyes in disgust. I can wait 1,000 lives. With his hand on my waist, he steers me down the palace steps into the open courtyard. To the east, the early sun charges into the sky with the glory of a desert god. On the other side of the gates, people press against the divide, cheering for the Ranis and courtesans surging out of the palace behind us. I glance over my shoulder, uncomfortable to have my contenders at my back. Any of them could have slipped the asp into my bed. I do not know them well enough to definitively say who, but the most likely contender is Anjali. She could not stay out of Tarek's lap last night, and she clearly wants to be one of his wives. Across the way, Anjali speaks with a group of courtesans. I search her face for surprise that I am alive, but she does not glance in my direction. The courtyard teems with servants, soldiers, and imperial guards. Among them are exotic animals I have seen only in books. Tarek stops before an elephant with shoulders nearly as tall as the outer wall. A howdah, a box carriage with a red silk canopy, is belted to the back of the beast. "We are riding that?" I ask Tarek over the din.
"I assure you it's safe."
Servants push a rolling staircase up to the elephant's side, and we climb into the high swaying carriage decorated with winking rubies. As I sit in the top heavy howdah, I twist to see a line of 4 more elephants behind us. 4 carriers are tied to their backs, one for each of the Raja's favored 4. Lakia climbs another rolling set of stairs into her howdah. She hates me more than all of my challengers combined. She did not slip the asp into my bed. Lakia wants the tournament over with almost as much as I do. Killing me before I wed the Raja would force Tarek to claim yet another Viraji to be his final Rani, as I am not yet his wife, and this extravaganza of death would start all over again. Imperial guards assemble the rest of the Ranis and courtesans. They will either walk to the amphitheater or ride on camels adorned with gold-tasseled saddles. From above the disorder, I scan for my guards. Yatin has found Natesha and hovers near her side. Manas hoists the Tarachand Empire's scorpion banner. I cannot see Devon. His absence should not bother me. But we left off so abruptly yesterday that I am concerned that he thinks I am angry with him. Perhaps Talin's execution has changed his mind about staying on as my guard. Tarek swallows a drink from a flask that was waiting in the carrier.
Kali, you're quiet.
His neutral tone puts me on edge. I immediately smooth out my frown. I asked my guards to help me set up a meeting with Gautam's wife. The general married my friend Jaya. Remember her from skill trials?
Ah, yes. Natesha cut her cheek.
Because of you? I pinch off my resentment before it pours from my voice. I would very much like to see her. Could you arrange it? He kisses my cheek.
Will you love anything?
My smile of gratitude doubles as one of gloating. Gautam will have to let me see Jaya now. A gong sounds, and then a dozen servants heave the gold palace doors open. An infantry troop clears the way, their horses pushing back people to clear the road. The sky and ground jerk as the howdah rocks side to side with the elephant's impressive strides. I clench the passenger's bar in front of me, and pray that I do not fall out. Tarek grins, his boyish delight genuine. I can scarcely believe that he is the feared Raja of the Tarachand Empire. Vani's streets are hardly passable. Clay huts clump together behind peasants, standing shoulder to shoulder along the roadway. Children, men, and women all clamoring for a view.
Viraji!
They cry, waving the Empire's red and black flag. Their adoration stuns me. Not long ago, I was a lowly temple ward. I have not accomplished anything to secure such adulation.
Wave to your admirers, says Tarik. They believe you to be Enlil's 100th Rani reincarnated. You are a legend come to life.
I fight off a frown. I want to tell them that I am no such hero, but their belief in what I represent stops me. I cannot rob their faith in the gods. Smiling tightly, I wave to their dirty faces. Many wave back with arms so skinny that they could be staffs, and with robes that have more holes in them than the roads. The gaudiness and wealth of our procession shames me. One ruby off this howdah could feed a family for many moons, yet no peasant dares cross the barrier of armed soldiers to filch one. Tarik may be able to sit on a gold throne and not despise himself, but I cannot. While Tarik is turned away, I rip a handful of rubies off the side of the howdah and toss them to the crowd. The gems rain down on the people, and a ripple of recognition travels fast. Needy hands and bodies swarm over each other in a mad dash for the jewels. Soldiers dismount their horses and barge in to break up the riot.
What is the disturbance?
Tarik calls down to a guard.
The Viraji threw rubies into the streets,
his man reports. Tarik slides his arm around my shoulders.
Wasn't that charitable?
He says for all to hear. His guards return to their duties, and Tarik's hand clamps down on my shoulder.
Do you mean to infuriate me?
I meant to devote them to you, your majesty. My lie tastes like dust on my tongue. More soldiers stop to tear apart the mob.
You needn't throw them jewels to gain their devotion. My people love me. Do you know why?
Raja Tarik kisses my earlobe, his lips hovering there. To all the world, we are lovers sharing an intimate conversation.
I give them what they hunger for most, not bread or clothes or coin.
His intrusive voice fills my head.
I give them the rank tournaments. I give them blood.
Almost an hour after leaving the palace, the amphitheater's rounded walls soar into view. Spectators stream through the open gates stationed around the exterior of the mighty stone and brick structure. Our elephant rocks to a stop beside a high-arched entry, and servants push forth a staircase for us to climb down. On the ground, I look out over the mass of people, their faces as numerous as grains of sand. Tarik takes my hand and lifts it into the air. Our audience hurrahs, and then he and I lead the court procession through the entry and into the dim corridors of the amphitheater. The imperial box is at the center of one of the narrower ends of the oval stadium, set apart from the other tiers by solid stone walls. A flat, marble platform, the podium, spans the area below us. Tarik's wives and courtesans gather on the first tier, vying for the best view of the arena. Two more tiers rise to our right and left, circling the stadium. The benefactors occupy the second tier. Most are already deep into their cups despite the morning hour. The third and highest tier is for the lower class. A tattered canopy shades a portion of the tiers, and above its flimsy ceiling brass gongs gleam as golden moons. I stare in amazement at the incredible breadth of the amphitheater and sea of people. The whole population of the City of Gems must be here. Tarik sits on his throne and motions for me to occupy the one to his left. Lakia takes the throne to his right. The rest of his court will watch from the terrace below. Drummers emerge from an underground level through metal gates. They strike up a marching cadence and cross the arena, their music silencing the audience. The hand drummers form a line before the imperial box and thump their final beat. In the sudden stillness, Raja Tarik approaches the banister and addresses his people.
Welcome to my 100th Viraji's rank tournament!
Thousands of spectators answer with deafening applause. The benefactors are the loudest, pounding their feet. They are why Devon did not want me to think that he enjoyed attending the tournament. He is not the sort of man who belongs here. Tarek waits for the commotion to settle and continues.
But Tarachand and